Joining me now on Inside Ivy Hoops is Cornell basketball great Jeff Foote. It's fantastic to have you on the show, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Good to be here. Oh, our pleasure, truly. I think to start off, to kind of get a whereabouts, I think a lot of listeners are aware that you went on to have a professional basketball career after graduating from Cornell, including a stint in the NBA. But I think maybe fewer know that you followed that with time served as graduate assistant for the men's basketball team in Miami, which ironically suffered back-to-back losses to Ivy this season. How did that come to be, and how did that give way to what you're doing now?
So it was kind of an interesting story of how it came about. I knew that I wanted to go to law school when my professional career was over. So that was always kind of on the table, but I was considering coaching at the same time. So I knew I wanted to be a graduate assistant to kind of get the experience while I was in law school. A lot of law schools are hesitant to allow that because it's such a time commitment both ways. Essentially, you're doing two full-time jobs. But when before I had graduated Cornell and after Coach Donahue had moved on to Boston College, briefly, Jim Larrañaga's son, Jay Larrañaga, was at Cornell while I was training for my professional career. And I got to know him pretty well. I tried to go play for him in the D-League when I was there, but it didn't work out. But when I knew I wanted to go to law school and I wanted to be a graduate assistant, I called him right away. Asked if his dad would be interested because I knew his dad is a great coach. Miami was a place that I had looked heavily at and I wanted to be in Florida. And you know, it was maybe 10 minutes later, Coach Larrañaga called me and said, we'll get it all worked out. And we did, and that's how I ended up there.
I see. And that's, and what do you, so it was a great opportunity to kind of fill out both potential career paths at the same time, essentially. And what do you like about what you do now?
Well, what I do now is there's a little bit more of a financial security involved with it. From the coaching aspect, it would have been probably an IB assistant, but the third assistants are obviously unpaid and a little bit more of a struggle. And there was just the financial consideration was probably the biggest part. It's hard to pass that up.
Oh, sure. And it's you know, an opportunity to be fulfilling, and I think you have Saul Goodman as your Twitter picture, right?
I do, yeah. So you're not. I don't think I'm as sleazy as a lawyer.
Yeah. You're not on Saul's level in a good way. Good way. Yeah. You haven't broken bad, so that's good. And it's good. It's good to know too, since most, you know, obviously most Ivy League basketball players eventually take on careers that aren't sports. Contributing to society in other ways. How much do you keep tabs on Cornell basketball these days?
I do keep quite a bit of tabs on Cornell. There's a few teams that I still follow pretty heavily. Cornell's one of them, obviously. Penn and Miami being the other two. So.
I see. What do you think of how those programs are doing? Well, Penn and Miami obviously played each other pretty rare. Well, it's actually the last two seasons, I think. So Penn obviously getting the best of Miami this time around. Penn, it's a remarkable story. What do you think of the job that Steve Donahue's done there? I mean, I don't think most would have expected him and his program to have achieved an Ivy League championship and NCAA tournament appearance within his first three seasons after taking over there?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm very biased. Coach D is a phenomenal coach. I think most of his former players expected that. Very happy with, you know, the success that he's had. He's done a tremendous job, and I always kind of thought that the Ivy League was really geared for him because he does a great job with smarter players who execute well. He's a tremendous X's and O's coach, so the ability to kind of communicate that information to his players and have the players respond correctly and kind of do what he envisions, it just matches up really well with him. And then obviously he's taken a little bit of the you know, kind of the path that we had when he was at Cornell with a lot of shooters and some good interior big men. So it's been kind of interesting to watch that. And just happy for his success for this season.
Sure.
For all the seasons so far.
Yeah, and what do you think makes him such a great X's and O's coach? Is it just his ability to communicate strategy better, or is it just more ingeniousness as to how he comes up with game plans, or what, a little bit of both, or what makes him such a great X's and O's coach?
I've always thought that he's very adaptable, and he's really a tremendous tailor of the offense and defense to the personnel that he has. X's and O's wise, he knows what people's strengths are and how to put them in positions to succeed. When they have a better basketball IQ and when they're able to understand certain difficult concepts that he likes to run, it shows up. They execute it well and it looks great. So I've always thought that he does a really great job of tailoring his coaching style to the personnel that he has. And then from an X's and O's standpoint, he's very good in-game at making adjustments on the fly, kind of reading certain matchups and how certain guys are playing at a time. From Cornell, we were a very unselfish team, but he would always recognize kind of, okay, Ryan's got the hot hand tonight, like, let's get him some extra looks, or they're really struggling to cover me inside or Lewis on the outside. And he does a good job of kind of feeling the game in the moment and exploiting those opportunities.
Yeah. Well, Ryan had the hot hand a lot.
Yeah, I did.
I think his hand was hot most of the time. How about Cornell, he snuck into the tournament last year. Matt Morgan's obviously joined you and Ryan and Lewis is one of the best players in program history. You excited about the direction of the program under Coach Earl and some of the tweaks that have come into play the last couple of seasons there?
Yeah, I actually am. I've met Coach Earl a few times. Obviously, played against him when I played. Played against him when he was at Princeton. John Jakes, the assistant, is a very close personal friend of mine. And so I kind of get a little bit more of an unfiltered view of the team sometimes. And I'm very excited about the direction that they're going. They look tremendous. Kid's a stud. He's a really, really good player. So it's been really exciting to watch, and hoping they continue to grow. They have a little bit of youth. They're a little youthful, so sometimes that can show up. But overall, just very, very excited about it.
What do you think? Where do you come down on the Ivy League tournament? Cornell obviously got in last year as a 4 seed, very dramatic. Them getting in on the final night of play. where do you, broadly speaking, come down on the concept and the execution of the tournament as is now?
I've gone back and forth a few times on it. I think it's overall a beneficial thing. One of the problems I thought when we played was a lot of teams were out basically middle of February. They had no real shot, and the Ivy was never going to be a two-bid league when we were there. So I think it does a great job of keeping kids engaged, especially if the team is struggling a little bit in January and February and the conference record isn't as great. But from another standpoint, I always enjoyed myself clinching the title and not worrying about, having a rough game that can essentially end our season. Our senior year when we were at our best, we had our worst game against Penn of the Palestra. It's just a situation where, again, I don't think the Ivy's going to be it. Or it was never going to be a too big league when we were there. So it would have been painfully brutal to lose and have to go to the NIT, especially when we felt like we were destined for bigger things. So kind of mixed feelings on it.
Yeah, I mean, I was against the tournament, and I would use, and many others used, your team, your senior year, losing at Penn as kind of a prime example of, why would you want to jeopardize what is obviously the best team in the league from getting a bid? Some years are better than others. The first year of the tournament on the men's side, Princeton clearly was the best team and came very perilously close to losing to Penn at the Palestra, and that would have been I feel like that would have been an outrage if that actually happened. But at some point, it's going to happen that a team that isn't an Ivy League regular season champion or co-champion is going to win the conference tournament and steal a bid from a team that seemed to earn it over the double round robin. But that just comes with the territory, I suppose. Now. But it's just the way it is. Your professional career, you played four games in 2012 for the New Orleans Hornets, right? Via a 10-day contract. What was that experience like? Was that a lifelong dream of yours, getting to play in the NBA?
Yeah, it had always been a dream of mine. It was in the moments that it was happening, it was a whirlwind. Getting called up from the D League, I was waking up from a nap, and we had a D League game that night that I got the call. But instead of being at the game and playing, I was on a plane bound for Denver. It was so fast. It was a great experience. I wish I could have gotten back there a little bit more, but it had always been a dream of mine, and it's something I'm pretty proud of. So that's what I can say about it.
Yeah. Most glorious of wake-up calls led to a pretty cool experience. That's awesome. And overseas, you played in Israel, Spain, Lithuania. In fact, you were an NBA D League All-Star and an All-Star and League champion in Lithuania, right? What was it like? Former Ivy basketball players, I've noticed, have over the years had mixed reactions to playing professionally overseas. You're continuing to follow your passion, but there can be, you lose structure when you are no longer in school, and there can be a sense of displacement. What was that experience like for you?
So I think Israel was kind of the roughest because it was at the very beginning, and you're not just a little ways away from your friends. You're, a 7-hour time difference from everything from your family, from everything. And it's a completely new environment, new city, new country. And basketball in Europe is very different than basketball here, college and professionally. It's much more of a physical game. There's a lot more pounding on the body. It's very demanding from a time schedule standpoint. And when you're doing that by yourself, that can be very lonely and kind of a little tough to deal with. And I think that's where a lot of guys struggle, because you don't have the kind of safety blanket of your teammates that you've known for years. And then, you know, just the style of play and the type of games is so much different, as well as the kind of transportation methods. You know, I was very lucky that I played for two EuroLeague teams, but I know a lot of players or guys that I know didn't get to play for those types of teams. And the transportation situations to games and the gyms that you play in, those can be really different, because you're used to, you know, at least having a bus, but occasionally, you know, I know some of the guys, they would have to like carpool, playing at gyms that are the size of middle school gyms, which, you know, in Lithuania, I was also, Žalgiris is a EuroLeague team, and it's kind of the national team. So there is a big stadium, but we did play a lot of those smaller Lithuanian teams. And I mean, you're talking about YMCA gyms, basically. So it can be it can be kind of a shock for people. And in Lithuania, I think I was lucky, because I'd been through it and I kind of knew it was coming. And again, I was on a very good team with a nice arena, so I was very happy there. But yeah, it's just a complete culture shock from playing, you know, college basketball here in the States.
From my comparatively limited view of overseas basketball, it is a lot more physical. it's that much more of a contact sport. It's interesting, given the, you know, to compare the two different cultural approaches to the game, I guess. Going back, you know, trying to tick all the boxes here. You're obviously getting into Cornell's story that has been told and retold many times. Your mother met then Cornell assistant and current Drexel head coach Zach Spiker when she was head nurse at the intensive care unit where Cleet Gant was staying after a serious cervical neck injury sustained at practice, and that eventually resulted in you transferring from St. Bonaventure to Cornell. And what made you feel more comfortable at Cornell with the team, with the program, with the campus, with everything? What made Cornell a better fit for you?
It was a bit different. You know, Bonaventure wasn't a bad fit. I'm still close with a few of my teammates that were there when I was there. Cornell was just, obviously, first of all, the academic degree is so valuable, and it's you know, it gets exponentially more valuable the further you kind of get. And with regards to the teammates, like, we just clicked right away. Connor Mullen, I lived right across the dorm from him, became a close friend of mine. And then we all ended up living together, and it just clicked really well. I was on my visit, I got a good sense of the coaches. Obviously, Spike was my guy. And it just became kind of more of a comfortable situation. Not knocking Bonaventure at all. You know, I did enjoy my time there. Cornell just seemed like a better fit, and the value of the degree was kind of what pushed me in that direction.
And it was a great atmosphere. Barry Leonard, longtime Cornell sports broadcaster, wrote a reflection on the era of you and Ryan and Lewis playing there a couple years back. He wrote of you, he would routinely during games wave his long arms to energize the home crowd at Newman Arena, and he would immediately sprint into the crowd to high-five and mingle with the fans after many a Big Red victory. What was the atmosphere during that run of Newman? I mean, I remember there was such a buzz because even, you know, when you look back at that, it was such a sea change from the Ben Princeton duopoly. And it was, I don't know, it seemed like an unprecedented thing in many ways. It was. What was that? What was the buzz on campus, especially, you know, as it became evident that this was the program was going to new heights at that point?
There was always a lot of energy on campus. I think from my perspective and from our team's perspective, obviously it had been 20 years since Cornell had won. So there was a lot of buzz, not only around the campus, but also in the community. I think it helped that, you know, I was somewhat local, and a lot of the people, a lot of like my high school family friends or people that knew me from high school were able to attend games as well. And I think that kind of fit very well with our team, because I think we had as a team, we had a personality that people could really relate to and cheer for. We were obviously very close, cared about each other a lot. And I think that kind of came out on the court. And obviously, we were very competitive and kind of took the program to places it hadn't been in a long time. So I think that there was, you know, there was a lot of buzz. And then it's, you know, the players at Cornell's campus, and myself included, we were pretty noticeable around campus. And like I said, I think we had a personality that a lot of people were attracted to and could relate to. So people had an easy time cheering for us. So that's, you know, I think it was just a perfect confluence of events that kind of just took it to a new level. And I agree with that. It was a little bit unprecedented at that time, especially our first championship. I remember vividly the Harvard game where we closed it out. It was at Newman and sold out. That place was rocking. So I think it's just a matter of like kind of a new, it had become kind of a new thing. It's something that people around weren't used to, but we're able to get very excited about.
Yeah, and do you feel like, in retrospect, that your run, and eventually culminating in the Sweet 16 run, of course, served to be an inflection point of sorts for the Ivy League, at least on the men's side, where, you know, the KenPom ratings and everything, you know, all the metrics really started to uptick. After that, you know, it was no longer the duopoly, but not just that, it wasn't just a matter of who was at the top. It was a matter of how good is the league. I mean, do you feel like that run kind of pushed the league forward into the new decade at that point?
I think the league had been headed in that direction. Or, you know, I certainly think that we helped push it there to the heights that it's at now, where you have, you know, Yale and Penn knocking off ACC teams pretty regularly. You know, but I think there had been a number of games that prior to us making our run that had kind of shown that the league was catching up. I remember Harvard beating BC was a big one, and there was a couple others that I'm blanking on right now, but I think we were along that trajectory, and the league was starting to get better. Obviously, when a team makes a big run and gets a lot of national spotlight, it attracts a lot of attention, and I think that, you know, that attention helps bring in players who might be right on the cusp of being you know, like higher level players that could probably play at bigger schools or higher conference schools to look at the Ivy League a little bit more seriously and realize that, oh, we can win. We can still win at these places. And, that attention, I think, has just continued to grow and continued to push the lead. So I think it was on that trajectory. I think maybe we accelerated it a little bit, but, the league now is much, much stronger.
Yeah, I mean, winning games in the NCAA tournament is not, it's almost, it's kind of a 50-50 proposition now for the Ivy League, and it's really become actually this decade more often than not, I believe. So, yeah, Sweet 16 run for the league is not nearly the rarity that it seemed to be to many nationally at the time when you made it. Jeff Foot, thank you so much for being so generous and insightful here today. And as we went over, thrilling run for the Ivy League that you guys provided, and really a crucial inflection point or